Hi, welcome back to Dealing, the Bus Lane Antiques podcast. In order for this episode to make full sense, you'll need to listen to part one. This is the second part.
In the last episode, we spoke about Alex's underlying heart condition. The crazy stories that were the catalyst for everything, spiraling into a really frightening time for both of us. You know that the armed robbery really threw Alex back a few steps, and we left part one with Alex checking himself into hospital.
So we did get things organised somewhat. I went off to live in with your hospital.
Yeah.
Which was how long's a piece
private
of
room.
Yeah. How long's a piece of string? You know, we're waiting for a donor.
Yeah. I mean there's a window. They talk about a window, don't they? So
yeah, so a window is to be in the hospital, which is where you need to be to get this heart and lung transplant.
You know, at this point you're on the critical list. You're on the urgent list.
Urgent,
and you have to be living in the hospital with a mainline drip.
Dopamine, yeah. Which is
in there, essentially, so that you're every minute of the day prepped, so that if organs come up...
Yeah, exactly.
You can go into surgery.
You know, the strongest you can be. So the window is...
You need to be ill enough to need
ill
the
enough to be... Yeah, exactly.
Urgently.
But well enough to survive the operation.
Exactly, yeah.
So they've got to catch you in this, you know, pretty thin ice period of...
Yeah.
Anyone's life, like not only my life, anyone in that situation.
Yeah,
you know, a transplant window is very rocky road. You know, it's touch and go. Is that the word? Like it's, you know, oh bloody hell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything can happen at that time.
I mean, if you miss it, then
You miss the window. That's it. So unfortunately, what happened for me?
You missed the window.
Well, I didn't miss the window. The no suitable donors came for me, unfortunately. Or actually, now I think fortunately no donors came, which obviously we'll touch on shortly. But
I mean, there was one sort of final option on the table.
Yeah, there is an off-the-shelf, which is it's called an LVAD. It's a mechanical pump that they implant into your heart. It's battery-powered.
Tube coming out your tummy.
Tube comes out your stomach. You're hooked up to batteries, which you constantly hooked up to.
Yeah. And this essentially is implanted into one of the ventricles of
the left ventricle.
And it does the pumping for your heart.
Yeah, it's a bridge to transplant.
Exactly, yeah.
So to get me to a point where, to give you life back until you can get a transplant. So it makes you better again.
Bridge to transplant.
So, and we've made it sound now like it's not a mobile device. You know, it's a portable device. You can't tell. You can see it, but it doesn't stop. You can still have a relatively normal life with it, but it's just a slightly impaired life.
And the crazy thing for me is that whilst you've got this LVAD in, so it's a pump, but you don't have a pulse because it's a continuous pump.
Yeah, there's no pulse, yeah. People with LVADs don't have a pulse.
How does it feel not having a pulse?
Yeah, you can't feel that you don't have a pulse. It's, you know, can you feel that you do have a pulse?
Sometimes, yeah.
Well, yeah, if you...
My heart's really going.
So I opted for to have the LVAD, which I really didn't want. You know, I was thinking, I'm a young bloke, I don't want to be... you know, attached to two batteries for the rest of, or for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So I thought, but by this point, kidneys were going, liver was going, everything was going, and the window was closing.
Yeah.
There was there was no way that even if a donor did come up, that I was going to survive to get that long. So I had to do something.
I mean, to be blunt about it, it was LVAD or...
LVAD or nothing. Yeah. Well, my back was against the wall and he was like, look, I know you don't want it, but...
Do you want to die?
It's better than the alternative. And I still say that now, you know. It's better than the alternative, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's shit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it makes me feel great. Makes me feel normal again.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've got a wire coming out and I'm attached to two batteries, but...
Sure.
Fucking hell. It doesn't matter, does it? It's amazing, really.
It is amazing, yeah. Iron Man. So,
the way the LVAD procedure goes is, you know, you're scheduled in. So it takes away that element of... The transplant is, you know, it's a phone call at the last minute.
Yeah.
And so this is gone. So I was in hospital,
booked
in. I knew when the day was going to be. It was the 25th of January.
Thursday.
I'd been in hospital for a few months before this.
Yeah.
A Thursday. Yeah, it was. I remember actually, because I remember as I was being wheeled down to the theatre, I was speaking to a couple of customers who hopefully will be Lisa Shuler,
yeah.
A pocket of rocks.
Good customer.
I think I was just selling her something actually. Might ask if I can buy that thing back off her.
Do you remember what it was?
I can't. I could if I went back through. Yeah, I would, but I'd have to look. Obviously, I can't remember now. So my operation was going to be different to any other LVAD they'd done before because, as we mentioned earlier, my anatomy is inverted.
Yes.
So the pump, which was supposed to go into the left ventricle, was going into my right ventricle because that did the job of the left ventricle.
Yes.
That probably sounds a bit confusing.
There is no RVAD, is there? It doesn't exist.
A right VAD. I don't think so, but I mean, I'm not qualified to say no. Sure. It wasn't.
Well, I mean, I imagine if there was an RVAD, they would have put it in.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, they were pretty good.
But basically, you know, this was new territory. This was.
Yeah, it was. There was a new surgeon, or a specialist surgeon coming down from Newcastle. Bizarrely, yeah. So Newcastle, you know, did play their part after all, because I was on there. Yeah, so Mr. Venkat, who is my surgeon now, had pulled in a favour from a mate up in Newcastle.
Right.
Said, and yeah, had, yeah, we got a
specialist in the congenital part.
Yeah, so exactly. Like, yeah, exactly.
Set of eyes that had that specialism.
Yeah, of course, someone who had, yeah. He hadn't done it before, but he was more experienced in the anatomy
the
so he could advise.
Yeah, okay.
25th of November, I go to operation. Say bye to everyone.
Yeah, so the way the surgery worked was they did the open heart part, put in the LVAD, and then they kept you under sedation in a coma, basically, for, what was it, 2 days afterwards, 3 days after the surgery? So they were planning on waking you up, I believe, on the Sunday, and essentially try to take you off the sedation, but you weren't responding in a normal way to that. So you weren't coming round, basically.
Wasn't waking up, yeah.
Wasn't waking up. And they sort of said, sometimes this happens. This isn't the most unusual thing, so we'll try again. In 2 days, we'll try and wake you up then. So that was Tuesday, I think. And
so then you pissed off on holiday to Madrid.
I go to Madrid every year to watch the Super Bowl. Please don't judge me, with a good friend. And so on the Thursday after operation, so 7 days afterwards, I got on the plane to Madrid. In Madrid airport, got a call from your mother, who basically cut right to the chase, just said, they've just done a scan and Alex has had a major stroke. At this point, I think the prognosis was pretty grim. I mean, I believe the doctors told your parents that you might not wake up.
Yeah,
it was that sort of severe.
What was going to be left of me when I woke up?
Prepare for the worst, really.
Yeah, it was like, he's a vegetable.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, people... how I felt. I mean, at this point, people say, you know, oh, I felt like I'd been hit by a train or whatever. And I'd never really experienced that before. But yeah, I felt like I'd been hit by a train.
You felt like you'd had a huge stroke.
Kind of, you know, numb. It was an interesting weekend. I mean, props to my friend Dan for not letting me go under that weekend.
That's all you need sometimes, company.
Yeah. So at this point... they'd done the scan. They knew you'd had a stroke. They didn't know what it was going to be like when they were eventually able to bring you around. And it wasn't for another month until they did actually successfully bring you around. So you mean you were in a?
Well, it's you're in a coma state, aren't you? When your brain has had such a trauma.
Yeah,
I think
you're in a coma
for
5 weeks.
A long time. Yeah, I think with the induced coma at the beginning.
Yeah.
I think it was a couple of months in total. So yeah, to paint the bigger picture, I've gone for this operation on the 25th.
Expected to be out for a couple of days.
well, you don't expect to be out. You just think you're going to get woken up and that'll be your next memory. Mm-hmm. But obviously, for me, that was pretty wild because I'd had a massive brain injury.
And then we now think that the stroke occurred as the surgery was taking place.
You have to put it crudely, you know, to implant the pump, the LVAD itself, the digging around in your heart, you know, they have to cut a hole out of your heart to put this in and then stitch it back in. So there's I mean, they used the term debris.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of debris while we're messing around in there. So something's obviously just got in his system and got lodged up in his brain.
Wow.
So yeah, I woke up. I mean, that period of waking up for me was
You must not have known what was going on.
Well, I had no idea what, because I mean, first of all, I'd been asleep for so long. So well, you just don't know what on earth has happened. Or it was crazy that those first few minutes, I can remember them now vividly. I thought my godmother was out the shooter, who wasn't there, because no one other than immediate family, I think yourself and partner, a limited number of people were allowed, but I thought people were in the room. It was, you know, hallucinations, crazy. You get, it's called ICU delirium, which I think when you've been out for that long and not moved and on obviously a huge amount of quantity of drugs mixed together.
Yeah.
So that then begun the process of getting, you know, I was conscious, I was awake. So that was the first hurdle at the time. The LVAD had been a success. My body had accepted it.
Oh yeah, the heart surgery part had been a great success.
Yeah, the cardiac point was done.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that first. So when I'd come to see you about a week after you first came round, and there's a few stories in that meeting. So I mean, you were maybe lucid for 30% of the time I was there with you. So I was able to have sort of like brief snippets of conversation with you, and then you were quite clearly hallucinating. So you were kind of like, oh, will you go and switch that shower off? There was no shower in the room. Or, oh, will you just pass me a bottle of water from the fridge over there? There was no fridge in the room.
No, I know there was. I know everyone was just telling me there wasn't.
The last time that I'd seen you immediately prior to you going into the operation, we'd been talking about how you were going to be in a coma for a few days, and we were talking about the film Inception and like dreams within dreams and stuff. And so 6 weeks on, this first time that I came in to see you, you were like, oh, it was well weird. It was like being in Inception. And of course, for you, that was like yesterday that we'd had that conversation. But for me, it kind of took a while to, I was like, oh, wow, yeah, 6 weeks ago, we were talking about that. It was crazy.
Yeah, the human brain. I think in those first instances, well, it took I think a few people were worried that maybe I'd, you know, totally lost my capacity to, I wasn't going to be the same person that I was, essentially. At the beginning, when I first came around, because it was just, you know.
So for that first time I came to see you, a week after. A week after you woke up, your dad and your brother and I had sort of devised a little test to do on you to see.
Yeah, I knew my dad would have been involved. Sounds very something he'd do.
To sort of see where you're at. And so your brother Nick wanted to buy a piece of jewellery for his wife.
Actually, I'm just learning this now. Mm-hmm. Did Nick not want to buy the piece of jewellery?
Nick actually did. It was her birthday, I think.
Oh, right.
Maybe it was their anniversary. Right. You know, he'd seen a bit of jewellery on our website and came to me and said, you know, how much is this? And at that point, we're like, all right, let's get Alex involved in this transaction. This is business.
Come on, give him a chance before we throw him in the nut house.
A bit of background. We have a code for the cost prices of our pieces of jewellery, so that they're all tagged up. And for when we go to fairs, for example, instead of having this one's cost £100, each number is replaced with a letter. So, you know, one is...
It's like Morse code.
So the test was, we'd give Alex this piece of jewellery and Nick would say, oh, how much is this, mate? And you'd look at the tag with the code on it and we'd see if you could give him a price for it. And so usually in this instance, if your brother was buying a piece of jewellery from you, you'd just give it to him at cost price because, you know.
Yeah, family discount. Friends of family. That is actually friends of family that time.
Exactly. And so this time, I'd handed you the piece of jewellery and the code.
It's just occurred to me now. He's not spoken to me since.
So you read the code, whatever it was, RXS, and you worked out what the cost price was, added on 5%, and then said, it's £525. And when, as you said it, you looked at me with a kind of sly, like...
What, like, I'm back.
I've got 25 quid on this. Which showed us all that, you know, your brain was kind of still working, still able to perform an abstract task, and it was a bit of a relief, to be honest.
Well, yeah, that was it. I still had my marbles.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I guess from there it was the road to recovery.
Yeah. You were soon transferred
out of intensive care onto like the step down ward.
More like a rehab ward, I guess.
Yeah, which was where I had to, from the stroke, I'd been affected, whereby I'd lost a lot of strength. It's weakness, isn't it? They call it weakness, but I think like I've lost strength. It's not weakness. Down my left side. Yeah, movement. So I had to learn to talk.
Walk.
Eat.
You're left-handed as well, so you had to learn how to use your right hand as your...
My dominant hand.
Dominant hand.
So in this step-down ward, it was all whilst getting used to being attached to the LVAD, which was a huge transition.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, something that has happened since then, like... The LVAD has been dwarfed by the effects of the stroke because, you know, the biggest hurdle for me has been getting back on my feet and getting back working. Stroke, yeah, exactly. And actually,
I mean, the LVAD's doing its job, and your heart function now is probably better than ever.
Yeah, exactly. Better than mine.
But when you, yeah, so within, I would say certainly within a month of coming back round on your road to recovery, you were having other dealers into your hospital room taking in jewelry to sell you.
Yeah, I was back
from
working,
your hospital bed. So before they'd even discharge you, you were back at work. It was crazy. And I would come in most days and, you know, we'd go through some admin stuff.
Or, yeah, we were working back at full capacity. I mean, you have to bear in mind, like, I had nothing to do. I was bored. You know, I'd been a busy person.
Yeah.
I've never been someone to sit around and not do anything.
Absolutely.
So luckily, you kept the... Kept steering the ship,
yeah,
to a point where actually, when I started to think, bloody hell, you know, my job's been taken whilst I've been out.
From my point of view, while this was all going on, while you were unconscious for 5 weeks, I mean, we didn't know what the end game was going to be here.
Exactly.
I was looking at it like, well, okay, I'm going to have to run this business. And
yeah, well, you still needed paying. I mean, I didn't need paying, obviously, but you still needed a wage. Yeah, you had to step up, basically, which is
I wanted to make sure that when you step back into the office after all this was said and done, the business was in a similar state to where you left it.
Yeah.
Or as close to that as possible.
Would you believe it? I came back and it was better. It was definitely tidier.
It was probably tidier.
No, we were in a better state, actually, when, you know, me being away for that period of time, there was no...
I think I did all right. And for me, you know...
Yeah, what a great way to learn for
going,
you.
Going through this, like, you know, my boss and my friend is, you know, no one knows what's going to happen. Having to take on that extra responsibility in the business and having to step up in that regard... In a sense, allowed me to take my mind off the severity of the situation. But I also felt like I was doing something for... I could be doing something for you.
Yeah, well, weren't you? Fucking hell. Like, you couldn't have done more than what you did, like, bloody hell.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I couldn't... I'm not a doctor, so I couldn't, like, fix you. But I there was something I could be doing, which was, you know, helping out.
And we still showed growth, you know? So it's showed me...
Yeah, well, we've just got our accounts back from that period, haven't we?
Yeah.
Continue to grow at the normal rate, which is somewhat remarkable, given the year that it was.
It proved to me that I could sort of... I've not backed off, and I won't back off, but it did prove to me that you were able, not that I ever thought you were capable, but that you could have more involvement, and as a result of that, I have made a conscious effort to sort of make you more of a part of the inner team.
Yeah, I mean, we work, I guess, more as partners now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
As an employer, without being partners, but relationship.
Obviously a very healthy pay rise.
Yeah,
and you know, a few other little perks here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we get the idea. You've been treated accordingly since. That's, you know, we don't need to talk about that. Yeah, it was amazing, really. It was a wild, wild journey.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess we're out the other end.
Yeah.
That was the catastrophic event. So to surmise, it was a pre-existing condition, a very nasty robbery, transplants, mechanical hearts, strokes.
Yeah.
All going on in the background. Half the time we didn't even know what was happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, still building a business, growing a business.
Yeah. And so health-wise, I mean, you know, explain where you're up to now. What's your current situation? You've got the LVAD installed.
Got the LVAD, you know, obviously. Stroke, well, no, to go back to the LVAD. So current situation, still need a transplant, but luckily don't need heart and lung transplant anymore because that is a much bigger recovery process. Just need a heart. Look, I mean, that is a crazy set. You know, thankfully, I only need a new heart.
And that's been off the back of the LVAD, isn't it? So the
LVAD has reduced the pulmonary pressures.
Which means you don't need a heart and lung. You can
just have a heart. So, you know.
Which is a much more routine operation. You know, the chances of the organ. Well, the chances of.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's the good thing. So I'm touch wood soon to be back on the routine list.
For a heart transplant,
which means.
At Withenshaw,
with the same surgeons, with the same team, which, you know, is amazing, which is an amazing, and that is why I say it's a blessing in disguise that I did get that this has all happened. Yeah, because, you know, I mean, life expectancy on a heart and lungs would be a lot less than just life expectancy on a heart.
Right.
So, it's everything's happened for a reason. And
would
obviously,
you say
the thing's
the true hero of the story?
I think you're the true hero, mate.
So, yeah, basically, you're expecting to have a heart transplant at some point in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and you know, it'll be back, you know, and hopefully no stroke in the meantime.
And I mean, how do you feel? Because, you know, a heart transplant is still a crazy thing on your horizon. How do you feel about that? Are you scared?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't be telling the truth if I said I'm absolutely petrified in so many ways that I couldn't actually articulate because of the stroke. But, you know, it's cool. I've got the best. I'm in the best hands, the most capable hands possible in terms of my surgical team. And I have the best support network, talking, you know, family, mates. But, you know, it is different now because we know it's going to happen. So you can
plan
run up to it. Yeah, you can plan for it. So, yeah, to answer your question, I'm scared and I have my moments, as you know, where things get too much for me and the pressure gets on top of me and all of a sudden, you know, and I have my, you know.
I mean, you're much better at coping with that kind of stuff now.
Well, yeah, exactly. Experience.
Experience,
with
absolutely.
Coping. So I guess my health has impacted the business, you know, but to find a positive in it, it's formed this for the future. Mine and your relationship, which means whatever happens to me, you know, I might not get a heart transplant because something awful might happen. Hopefully, I doubt it will, but it could do. But I know that Butter Lane is in the best possible hands. I continue to work as I always did, which is tremendously hard, focused, and dedicated to what I'm dedicated to, which is continuous growth of the brand.
absolutely. Okay, so every week, as you will be familiar now, we have a final question. So
well, you're gonna go easy on me though, aren't you? Because
it's my turn,
because I've done so much talking.
It's my turn this week, so it's gonna be short. It's gonna be a yes or no question. Can you be sure that you're not still in the coma?
Wow.
This kind of goes back to your philosophy degree.
Oh, God.
The kind of brain in a jar.
I never thought
brain in a jar.
Brain in a vat. Well, what would Descartes have said? I think, therefore, I am. Yes, I've used it. Mum, I've used my degree again. I am definitely not in a coma. I am. I can't be sure. But
I can be sure, though.
You can be sure.
And I'm telling you that you're not.
I'm not in a coma.
It was all a dream.
I tell you what, it has crossed my mind before. Like, it was so realistic that fucking hell.
Because, I mean, you sort of have what, like vague memories and recollections of when you're in comas, of snippets of conversation, people being in the room with you.
Yeah, of course, and information that I took in.
So you weren't just out.
Because you got to think, you know, the family were coming in and they were talking.
Yeah.
And then when I woke up, I heard about this. You know, and I knew I was familiar with certain points. So
yeah,
you do hear things when you're unconscious.
Yeah.
So I can't be sure, but you can be sure is my answer. And thank you for asking me. You know, I wanted my degree.
That was a pretty heavy question. Just
I wanted my degree to sit on my parents' mantelpiece, you know, and not to be used again because it's dangerous.
Okay, I won't bring up anything. I know
you find it highly entertaining that I've got a philosophy degree.
I find it highly entertaining, yeah. Okay, thank you for listening.
Wow.
Next week,
wild.
We are going to tell you some of our favorite stories from Butter Lane. We're going to raise the tone back to a more sort of
business.
Positive and...
No, that's a positive story. Come on.
No, it's a positive story. It's a positive story.
A shit story that has been tremendously positive. So
there were some dark points, but I mean, yeah, look where we are now. So you're a bit more familiar with our backstory. There is so much more to tell you. We release episodes weekly on Tuesdays. Make sure to follow us on Spotify and subscribe on Apple Music, and you will be reminded when a new episode is released. Follow us on Instagram and on Facebook, and of course, check out our pieces for sale at www.butterlaneantiques.com.